The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show, Your Money with David Hayes. What a glorious Thursday, and I understand the weekend's going to be just as good. We're going to be at beautiful West Boggs Park in Lagodi, Indiana for our twice-a-year family camp out, so looking extremely forward to that. I've been gone a lot, as many of you know, kind of slip in, do this, do that, but the Hayes Boy camp out is a staple that I would never miss. In fact, I would plan completely around it, because it's such a great tradition. I think 25, 30 years, probably something like that, 30 years we've been doing this. Maybe longer, I don't know, but it's fun. My dad will be there, some uncles, cousins, now their kids, and, you know, visitors of all ages and stages of life. So it'll be a great week. This past weekend, of course, we had Memorial Day. But we had, I actually captained a bass boat for the high school state tournament up at Wawa Sea in Warsaw, and then sent the little angler back to Bloomington with someone else, and then pivoted and went to Cleveland for my mastermind collegium, which is a group of people that get together, and they're big thinkers, and you just get a lot out of it. So I was there on Sunday, I think Monday, and then I came on Monday night. So I did pull my bass boat all the way to Cleveland, which is an interesting challenge, because I wanted to dump it off somewhere. So I pivoted, was heading towards Columbus, and I thought to myself, let's backpedal this thing. Let's first call the Hilton downtown Cleveland to find out like what their parking situation is like. So I made that phone call first, and the guy's like, I told him, I said, hey, I'm pulling a 21-foot boat. Do I have a place to park? He said, yeah, we have some street parking or surface parking behind the county building. You can park it there. I'm like, okay. Because otherwise, I was going to try to find a buddy in Columbus. And then another friend has a farm just outside of Cleveland. But it worked out. So it was kind of a funny story that everyone thought, you pulled that thing all the way to Cleveland? Well, yes. And then I pulled it all the way home on Monday night. And just know, when you're pulling a bass boat behind you going 70 miles an hour down the interstate, your gas mileage drops in half. So we went from around a 22 mile, per gallon per mile, whatever you call it, and to about 12. So I had to stop about three times on my way home to get fuel. But we made it, and it was a great meeting. I was just trying to figure out if there was any takeaways I could share with you that would maybe mean anything. And, you know, a couple things that I found was interesting, that we talked about listening. You need to understand before you should be understood. And I would say that's true in any counseling situation or coaching situation. People climb the ladder of some career only to get to the top and find that their ladder was on the wrong wall, stuff like that. How self-made people think. They hate the word retirement. Think of yourself if you're in business for yourself. I mean, are you looking forward to retirement? Well, you know, you're never going to get rich when you can't wait for something to end. So when people say that the clock is ticking on my retirement, I have 438 days left. You've heard people say this. That's a miserable situation to be in. And, you know, if you can't wait for something to end, you're not going to be able to make a lot of money doing it. So just really kind of helps me continue to think differently, keep things simple, be everything to a few people, not a few things to everyone. That's super important. Start recording all my meetings that I have with people, one, so they know that I'm paying attention and would like to go back and listen to it if I miss something. But the way I do things now, after being in this wonderful career for nearly 30 years, I don't take notes. I always have a note taker, a scriber, in the meetings with me. All I do is ask questions and listen, and then they take the notes. Then I typically don't give any massive solutions to any issues, unless they're just easy nuggets that we can knock off in our conversation. But then they come back, and then they go through the vision, right? We help create a vision of what this future is going to look like. And this is what, when people say, well, do I need a financial advisor? I don't really even like the word financial advisor, but we just simply can't come up with any other word. So, but do I need a financial visionary? Do I need a financial coach? What do I need here? I think that is what you need to get through to yourself is, do you have to have $1 million to go see a financial advisor? The answer is no. If you want to get on the right path, you should go see someone that can help you create the vision, help you when you're going through discontinuous change, like loss of a job, death of a spouse. You know, I look at my week this week, and I told my wife, and I rarely talk about stuff when I go home. I'm like, I have dealt with so many issues this week that are just incredibly rewarding, number one, but the variety. And it just makes me really excited to come in every week, because you never know what you're going to come across. I used to love watching Pawn Stars on whatever, on cable. And this guy would say, you know, after 28 years or whatever, you never know what's going to walk through the door. That's kind of the way I feel. You never know what's going to walk through the door, what curveball is going to be thrown at you, or what situation you're going to have to help someone deal with. But it's a very rewarding field to be in, for sure. It's not for everybody. It's not a get-rich-quick business, that's for sure. But to be able to circle yourself with some of the best thinkers in my entire industry and friends who have watched each other grow practices, raise families in hopefully a semi-right way, then it's just fun to get around those guys. So I had a great time in Cleveland, but back at it all this week, and then camping this weekend. But I'll be around all next week and ready to bring a great show hopefully to you again. Then I had Ed Slott up in Indianapolis. A buddy of mine called. He's in his two-day meeting up there. Ed wanted me to come up and have dinner with him at St. Elmo's, and I just couldn't make it happen with all the different things I had going on. But yeah, he's just up the road training more advisors in Indiana and around the region on how to be the top 1% of knowledge knowers, or people that know things, and help people around the country. All right, before we take a quick break and talk about what's happening in the markets and get Hot Rod on, we got to do a shout-out to the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family that peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. I paid a bill this week to Unrivaled Electric for doing electrical work on a house down in Harrodsburg my son is working on. But they want to be your full-service electrical contractor. They're fantastic, by the way, specializing in generators like mine, solar arrays. I don't have that. They are veteran-owned. My friend Tim, give him a call, 812-361-3604, or find Unrivaled Electric online. And lastly, ran into Dirk recently at Kenny Bland Auctions. They are your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. Definitely visit them at KennyBlandAuctions.com. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's do a little recap of that shortened week we had on Memorial Day and where we are today. And we're going to get Rod on the phone in just a minute. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Let's take a little peek at last week, and then we'll get Rod to comment about where we are today. Last week, stocks surged higher in the closing days of that holiday shortened week, ignited by a political resolution on raising the debt ceiling and a strong employment report. All the indices were up. A little sigh of relief. The weight of the uncertainty over the negotiations to raise the debt ceiling was lifted last week by the news that we had an agreement between the President and House Speaker, and then its passage in Congress. After a modest gain on Thursday, which I've been telling you guys this, that the market's really not pricing in any significant issues when it comes to this. I was saying to everyone, let's look at the bond yields. When I called him when Doug was hosting the show, if we really thought we were going to default on our debt, would our 10-year treasury be sitting in the, you know, three somewhere or close to four? No. Think of Greece. Remember when we were worried about that? Well, we did have a modest gain on Thursday. Following that House vote, stocks rallied on Friday, responding to the Senate passage of a debt ceiling bill. So It eliminated that significant overhang to the market. A robust federal employment report also contributed to Friday's rally. The report exceeded market expectations in growth of new jobs while reflecting a deceleration in wage growth, which is important to understand that and why that's important. So we have the labor market, and that's been a head scratcher because that was the goal, right, to squish demand and create unemployment so that we could slow this thing down. But last week's employment data showed that the labor market remained pretty stout after over one year of sharp interest rate hikes. Job openings in April increased to more than 10 million, reversing the three straight months of decline. Private sector employment increased by 278,000 jobs in May. Now, remember, folks, we have a lot of people entering the workforce. All these young people, they're graduating high school, trade schools, college, and they're entering at a massive pace. So you need to have 278 or probably more, a lot more, to just absorb the new people coming in, especially when people tend to delay their retirements when you have a lot of uncertainty. That's just the way people are. But it was in line with these strong numbers. The Department of Labor reported 339,000 new jobs were added in May. That came in above the estimate of 190 and marked the 29th consecutive month of positive growth. And it was probably the first week, Rod, that I did not talk about the Fed. But we can talk about them if you want. But here we are in a new week, and this market, it's a head-scratcher in many ways.
Yeah, it most certainly is. And to follow on to your point here with the labor market, the only thing with those labor data, it was pointed out in, I get a Sunday outlook for the upcoming week, and it has various different charts and data points in there. But I found this interesting. One of the things they pointed out in that government report, as you said, 339,000 new jobs added. You also had 440,000 new unemployed persons, which caused the unemployment rate to rise from 3.4 to 3.7%, but no change in participation rate. In all reality, those two data points can't be true. If the last one is true, that you had no change in participation, you can't lose more jobs than you added and increase unemployment, but yet, you know, talk about a strong jobs number of adding that many jobs. So there's some fuzzy math in there somewhere. Now, I'm not suggesting that the government pumped the numbers up to make the jobs number look better. Just stating the fact that the numbers don't add up, what does that really mean? I don't know. But I think to the point of what you said in regards to the market and where we're at, and that maybe it doesn't seem like the market should be where it is at. I think another point to that, in addition to the many other I pointed out on the last show, as far as how low volatility is, where the price-to-earnings multiple is on the S&P 500, where future earnings expectations are at. Another one is you have had 13 consecutive weeks of more new lows than new highs.
Mm-hmm.
That's typically not a positive sign of a brand-new bull market. In addition to the fact you have discussed this, that it has been a very narrow rally this year.
Yep.
Now, last week, that rally didn't broaden out a little bit. But prior to last week, I think you and I both saw similar statistics that basically said if you pulled the top seven stocks, and I say top seven, by performance, not necessarily by market cap size, but they are large ones, so they most certainly have a heavy influence on the index. But if you pulled those top seven out of the S&P 500, instead of being up double digits year to date, you're actually only up about 1%. So it isn't a broad rally that's going on, and you don't have a lot of indicators that tell you that, hey, this is the beginning of a brand new bull market outside of the positive technicals we have seen in breaking through 4,200, closing above it, and holding on to that move above 4,200, at least up to this point.
If you look at that narrow-based rally, there was a great article in the Journal, I think it was on Wednesday of this week, where the major indices, they kind of talk about all that, and the cap-weighted aspect to the S&P, which means, like Rod said, that a certain number of companies drive the majority of the return in the S&P. And the bigger these companies get, the more they're pushing. But most people, and this is one of the arguments that I've given people who want to move, let's say, TSP, right, the federal government retirement plan, they want to move money out of the C fund into maybe a more equal weighted portfolio. Well, they think, okay, well, the C fund, that has to be a safer place to put my money because it's based on the S&P 500. I would argue it's more risky because you have this cap weighted index. and so few stocks drive that index. So if you go to a more equal-weighted aspect, as an example, if the S&P would have been equal-weighted across the board, and there is an index that tracks that, by the way, it goes from being up 12 to up 1.8. So if you're sitting there looking at your account, person, you know, and you're saying, hey, wait a second, S&P's up 12 and I'm up 2, well, it's because you probably have a little better balance in your portfolio and therefore less risk. Rod, you and I haven't talked about that, but that's something I've been on my soapbox on recently. And you know how I get on my soapboxes, and then I get off of them, then I move on. But it's definitely something that needs to be discussed.
Yeah, most certainly. And I think that risk component is something that gets ignored on a consistent basis outside of when we were in a awful market like we saw in 22. But obviously in 22, when the market's down 15, 20, 25%, even 30% as far as the NASDAQ and the triple Qs go, then all of a sudden people begin to acknowledge and assess risk and how much risk they're willing to take. Outside of that, they tend to forget that as a component. You and I had a discussion earlier this morning in regards to some questions from some clients coming in. You know, and that was part of my point. Understand there are multiple factors that help drive our portfolio management philosophy. But sitting at the top and what we believe to be the most important, not that they aren't all very important, but most important, it's risk. How much risk are you taking for the client? Is it too much risk? Is it not enough risk for their time horizon and their objective? And obviously that risk component is different for every single person. It's not the same because you're both 50 years old and you both plan to retire at 62 or any of those categories. That doesn't automatically mean you're in the same risk tolerance category because everybody's gut is a little bit different. I can handle a heck of a lot more risk than probably most of our clients can. It's not good nor bad. It's just the way it is. And clients need to be able to properly assess what their real risk is. When we're in the throes of a bull market, everybody feels like they are willing to take on more risk, although they don't call it more risk. They're looking at hindsight performance and wanting to get that same performance moving forward and are willing to not evaluate risk, but to look at past performance, assuming that past performance will equate to future performance as well.
Yeah, folks, you're still not back to even from 2 years ago, so you have to keep that. Your two-year number's still not there. Rob, we had a big move on Monday. I hadn't talked to you much about the whys behind that. But, you know, one thing I was going to bring up in our discussion today is everybody is anticipating a recession. The Fed's anticipating one. Everyone's saying, oh, the recession's probably going to happen the end of this year, the first of next year. I think we'll have a recession. I don't know. I think we'll be out of it before we even realize we were really in it. But I think it will probably happen. But I also go back to something I've said for years. When everyone says something's going to happen, it rarely happens. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think that it is extremely difficult to predict. The only reason I have leaned towards us eventually ending in a recession, there haven't been very many times we have seen this aggressive of a Fed as far as rate increases not eventually end up in a recession. And the reality is, it's just extremely difficult for them to analyze how big of an impact what they have already done will have in the future, given that we know there is a lag effect. Now, that lag, many say it's 6 to 9 months, but in all reality, that's even a bit of a guess. We don't truly know how big or long that lag effect is. So the reality is, the Fed can easily go beyond the rate that they need to because the data isn't showing up that they want to see as of yet, but it also doesn't mean that it's not going to at some point in time. So while the Fed continues in this battling inflation, we do continue to see a very slight deterioration within economic fundamentals. They're not extreme. They're not jumping out at you as, oh my gosh, things are just falling off a cliff and the economy looks horrible. No, the job market has still been very solid and strong. The consumer has still continued to consume. Now, we have expressed concerns that maybe the consumer is beginning to consume a little too much on that credit card account than the excess savings they have accumulated. But the reality is the data points continue to look favorable although slightly weakening, nothing that is alarming that tells you, oh my gosh, the Fed needs to stop raising rates and may need to decrease, which is where I come to the conclusion that potentially the Fed ends up pushing us a little too far into the restrictive territory, and we probably do get some form of a recession. But I'm not in a position that I'm willing to say it's a mild recession, it's a deep recession, it's short, it's long. We just don't know because we don't have enough data yet, and we still haven't felt the impacts of what the Fed has done up to this point, let alone what the Fed is going to do moving forward.
Yeah, and I think the speculation is they could pause in June, raise again in July, and just kind of stick for a while. And we'll see. We'll see. But like you said, I mean, the market moved last year down 18% on the S&P 500. The question is, could that have been the correction that we needed in anticipation of a pending recession? Hey, we'll let you know. Remember what I always say about economics and people that try to predict the market. How do you know the difference between a genius and a quack? You've got to really look back about 30 years and say, these guys were geniuses. Look at that. They talked about this. Look what really happened. Markets, you know, you can't really predict day to day, week to week, month to month, year to year. Just own good stuff that is quality, ran like no other company, and own it. And that way you'll hedge inflation over time. You're going to own some great stuff. Doesn't mean you don't make a change here and there. But, you know, if you're out there trying to, as you say, Rod, don't own a company but rent a company, that's a bad way to go. And almost in every situation, when I've run across people that have tried to be these real active crazy traders, it hardly ever works out. Remember my story about the two sisters that worked at the same company?
Yep.
For almost the exact same amount of time. One worked in production, one worked in the office. The office one had access to her computer all day long, and she was always moving money around here and there and everywhere. The other one didn't ever touch it. She just continued to put money in, which is the only thing she can control or anyone can control. And then when they both retired within a month of each other, one of them had over $200,000 more. Which one was it? It was the one that never messed with it. Rod, any final comments before we let you go? And look forward to Big Show Friday with Glass in the Afternoon.
Hey, yeah. Hey, patience is one of the key components in successful investing strategies. And it's a very hard one because when you're talking about equity and patience, you're really talking 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. And in today's electronic world in which we are delivered information minute by minute, if not second by second, it's extremely hard to not focus on the very short term of equity investing and be patient for the long haul. But if you own those quality companies long term, as you just said in that example of the two sisters, you own good quality companies and you own them for the long haul and you don't try and outsmart the market, you're probably going to come out ahead of those people who think that they are going to be able to outguess the market when it's going up, when it's going down, and are constantly jumping in and out of the market over that same period of time. Own good quality companies run by good quality management teams and own them, as you just said, Dave, what I like to say, own them. Don't rent them. Don't lease them. Yes, you can make some changes because things change even within those companies and the management streams, or better opportunities may arise in other places. But the intent isn't that I'm going to buy this for the next quarter. I'm going to buy it for the next 5+ years. That, I think, is very key, and the patience to do that is not easy.
Rod's talking to all of us like we're his kids. Be patient, guys. Be patient. Rod, thanks as always. Great job. I will be listening for you tomorrow afternoon on Glass in the Afternoon.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Have a great show.
Let's take a break. When we come back, you know, I've been preaching and hounding you, right, for years to put money into a Roth, to do Roth conversions, pay tax on the seed, not the harvest. So when do you finally use this money? I did a podcast on this not long ago. When do you use the money? The answer is simpler than you think. I'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. So you've been a good, disciplined person. You've been moving money from taxed forever to tax-free forever, right? You've been doing this. I know you have been. Many of you started this journey with me many years ago, but especially after the 2017 tax cuts were passed and we had this enormous opportunity between then and 2025 to do the best we can to get out of the crosshairs of higher taxes coming. So you've done it. You've been doing it, right? You're happy. You've got all this money tax-free now. But the question is, when do you actually use it? Now, logical thinking is you never use it. You leave it, Remember my multi-generational wealth idea where me, 53, does a $200,000 conversion. I pay, you know, 60 grand in tax and I die in 10 years. My wife takes it. And if you double it money every 10 years at 7.2%, that 200 went to 400. Remember this story? And then my wife lives for 30 more years. So it goes from 400 to 800, 1.6 to 3.2. Then she dies and it goes to my son who's in his 60s. And he takes it and he can let it sit for another 10 years. It goes well over $6 million on one simple Roth conversion that I made at 53 years old. So I paid $60,000 in tax to have $6 million tax-free. That's a good deal. But when do you want to use it? The answer is whenever you want or whenever it makes the most sense. I've had two situations recently where we used the Roth. One, they were going to buy a house. And we decided that we should take it from, majority of it from the Roth. Now, they had to make a quick decision, so I said, let's take it from the Roth because we know it's good money, clean money, and then we have 60 days to put money back in the Roth as a rollover. And they had some other taxable money, so we're doing an analysis right now. How much should we roll back into the Roth? And we are going to roll some back in. The answer is some, but when did they use this Roth? It's now because they're wanting to buy a house. The other situation was buying some land. It's like, okay, we've already done a big Roth conversion. We've been doing this for the last several years. We've got this big pot of money that I already paid tax on. Some was done super strategically when the markets were down and, you know, all this money came back when we had the rally, like in 2020 as an example. So, yeah, you know, if you take more money out to go buy land and you don't want to borrow money because the cost of money is too high, go where the money's the cheapest, and that is the Roth. In this person's case, he was single, and if we would have taken more taxable money, he would have triggered Medicare excess, Medicare premiums that were going to be outrageous. But the plan is that, the idea here is that you are in control. If you said, I need to come up with 500 grand to buy a piece of property, and all of my money is in tax-deferred investments, and you have to go to the IRA to get it, and you have to take, call it $800,000 to net what you want, maybe more than that. I mean, by the time you hit the 37 plus 5% state, you're at 42%, and you pay tax on all of that, that's expensive money. And if you are on Social Security or Medicare, then your Medicare premiums go up, right? If you are a single taxpayer, you're getting your head ripped off even more because of the lack of deductions. So it's just a situation where by you doing this, being disciplined and moving money into Roth, contributing to Roth, it's your money. All of it's yours. And you can use it and have it for whenever you need it, for whatever reason that you need it for. So with that being said, just one more reason for you to have money in a Roth IRA and not in a traditional tax-infested traditional IRA. You don't want to give God's money to the devil, and that's what you're doing when you continue to defer into the future, because we have no idea what that's going to look like down the road. So just pay them off now and be done with it. I can't wait to do my next taxes and retirement workshop. I'm going to do those over at Ivy Tech this fall. I'm coming up with so much good new material that if someone comes to a program and walks away and is not completely inspired and motivated to do something, then I can't help them. And like I said last week, I think, just turn the radio off. Go out and enjoy the yard or something, because you're not going to get it, obviously. I was talking to a CPA friend of mine. I'm going to talk about that here in just a few minutes, Marty James. And Marty is definitely a recovering accountant. Now, he's never really been on the side of pay tax at the furthest possible point in the future. He's always been about paying it when it's the cheapest. But most CPAs are getting it. You know, we were just wired that way as tax people to say, pay as little as possible now. Take the depreciation on your real estate because you get those great tax benefits now. And then you turn around and sell the real estate down the road and you have to recapture all that depreciation. Like, well, this stinks. Well, that's the same thing with retirement accounts. A lot of them were like, why don't we, you know, you don't have to take any money out. Let's use your other money that you've already paid tax on. We'll get to required distribution age. We'll take out that little 3.65% each year. And that's assuming that nothing changed in the future. That could potentially be arguable. But now most of the CPAs that I run into around here are completely on board. They get it. They want to max out their tax brackets. They want to make sure that they get out of the crosshairs of massive RMDs, required minimum distributions, down the road when you have no control over that. And remember, the rules, the way they are now, assume you have a spouse 10 years younger, so the distributions are relatively manageable. But what if they said, no, we're not going to do that anymore? They've already made some precedented moves in that direction when it came to inherited IRAs. They said, listen, no, this isn't your IRA that you get to take out your dad's money over your entire lifetime. It's his retirement account, and we're going to make you take it all out over the next 120 months. Well, what if they went back and said, hey, no longer are we going to let you use this life expectancy table that assumes you have a spouse 10 years younger and everyone's married. That's what we use now. They say, no, we're going to flip it to the single life table. Look it up. Instead of 27.4 years that you get to take it out over, now it's like 16.8. Well, if you divide 16.8 into a number versus 27 into a number, guess what? The number's much bigger that you have to take out. So they don't even have to change the tax law for you to be forced to pay tax on more money. So once again, does a Roth have a required distribution? No. If you die and someone non-spouse inherits it, do they have to take an RMD? No. And do they get to wait up to 10 years to take it all out tax-free? Yes. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I will talk a little bit about my friend Marty because he is going to do some podcasts with me next week. And I'll tell you what, I apologize for you loyal listeners that I have not had time to get the podcast done that I promised you on why are you getting these 5498s in May. I did a little bit on the show, but I have a good outline put together. I'm going to dig into it deeply, and I just haven't had time. I know it's like, you don't have 15 minutes to sit down. Well, I probably do have 15 minutes, but when I did, it was like 9:30 at night, and who wants to do it at 9:30 at night? I want to do it when I'm fresh and ready to rock and roll. All right, we'll take a quickie. I'll be back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. I was at the Mastermind Collegium up in Cleveland on Sunday evening, all day Monday. Drove home from there on Monday evening to then have a packed Tuesday, packed Wednesday, and a pretty light Thursday, and then off to beautiful West Boggs Park in Ligoti, Indiana, on Friday for our camp out and fishing extravaganza. So it'll be fun. But I've been busy. I've been on the road going hard. And, it's just I need to be home more. I'm tired of saying yes to everything. I'm going to have to say no to everything. But this meeting that I had up in Cleveland was outstanding. And the good news is I got to sit right next to one of the smartest guys I know, Martin James. And he had a lot to say. And we had a couple of topics we kicked around that we could cover in our podcast. And we'll probably do these next week, I hope. He talked about, you know, don't over Roth. You know, here I am telling you Roth. And that's true. But how much should you leave in your traditional IRA? Well, don't over Roth yourself. You don't have money set aside in the IRA to give away to your charities. Because remember, after 70 and a half, and I know we have a lot of numbers out there, it's 70 and a half, 72, 73, now 75 to have to think about when it comes to retirement accounts. You can give money directly from a charity from your IRA tax-free qualified charitable distribution. So if you give $5,000 away, $2,000 away, you can just kind of decide what makes the most sense so that your qualified charitable distribution goes to satisfy your required distribution and it's all tax-free. So you don't want to over Roth, and that was his thing. The other thing that he brought up to me, and you know what? It's one of those things that you probably just don't talk about. But he brought it up to me because he's had to deal with a little bit in his family. But family planning when it comes to retirement accounts with kids who have addiction issues, right? How many people out there have kids that have addiction issues or even adult children who have addiction issues? How to deal with that? So we're going to have a conversation about that. And it will be around taxes, but it will have certainly some a lot of empathy for people that are dealing with that type of situation. And then also kind of going back and reviewing what should RMDs really stand for? Is it required minimum distributions? The answer is no. Required maximum distributions. And then also if you are trying to get your ACA premium credits, there are some sunset provisions coming. You want to talk about that, how to maximize the Roth to make sure that you get premium credits, and that's for folks that are not on Medicare yet and have to buy their insurance on their own, like through the exchange. So he's full of ideas that will make your head spin. And that's why I love being part of these mastermind groups. I'm hanging out with what I believe are the brightest minds in the country. I was talking to Marty on my way home from Cleveland. I actually cut out a little bit early because I was like, okay, I looked at the agenda for the afternoon. This is a little different, some breakout sessions, and I'm I'd rather just say kind of get out of here. And Marty did the same thing. But I was talking to him on my way home when he said when he mentioned the same thing I just mentioned, that, you know, some of the smartest people in the country are here. And I'm like, does that include me, Marty? And he laughed because, of course, it does. So he knew, you know, that I'm a creative thinker. He knows that I like to question things. He knows that that's just the way I'm wired. Now, I'm not necessarily a conspiracy theorist, although I do have a little aluminum hat on right now with little antennas sticking out of it, but you can't see me because I'm on radio. So occasionally I bring those out, but it really just gets you thinking. Like today I was talking with someone about mortgage rates, and I'm like, you know, the issue isn't interest rates, it's the payment. Because when you go to the bank, what do they want to know? Your debt-to-income ratio. So all we need is a 35- or 40-year mortgage, and it just fixes everything. Payments are lower. People are still going to pay off their mortgages in 7 to 9 years like they have for years because people move, they change jobs, they get divorced. So the average mortgage is paid off in about 7 to 9 years. I don't care if it's 40-year amortization or 50-year amortization or even what Japan did at one point. I believe and had to start going to 100-year amortizations to get things affordable when their real estate prices, like in the 80s, I believe it was, went crazy. So there's just creative thinking out there, and I can't change how the mortgage industry works, but I do like to say things that makes a little bit of sense, and when they come to fruition, I can say, do you remember us talking about that? And if it never comes to fruition, we just don't mention it anymore. That's the way it works when you're on the radio. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, what else I got here? I've got stuff. Don't worry. I always prepare, way over prepare for the show. This is Your Money with David Hayes. I'm just kind of looking at my notes and trying to decide what I want to talk about next. But, you know, I was mentioning earlier about the financial advisor. Who needs one? You know, there are a lot of do-it-yourselfers out there, and that's okay. But if you think about it, if we both have the same car in the garage, have you watched these BMW commercials where they have, like, high-performance cars and these professional drivers, and they're just going crazy? And it's like, could you do that? I'm like, no. Well, you have the same car, why can't you do that? Well, I just don't have the experience. I don't have this training. I don't have that. To me, that's kind of like having a financial advisor, a professional driver, someone that does it every day, right? In my book, when I talk about packing your own parachute, would you want to pack your own parachute if it was your very first parachute that you ever packed and you were going to fly over enemy lines with the risk of being shot down? No, you want someone that packs parachutes every day. That's what I call, you know, hiring an expert. And usually when you get ready to retire about 5 years out, that's when it really gets serious, where you need to start really using a professional. But before that, you know, you can go online and use some of these, you know, general guides that say, if I keep saving this and I have Social Security here, you know, am I going to have this much income in retirement? So that's okay. But then when it comes to building a well thought through, coordinated plan to not only get the maximum income in retirement, if that's the way that you're wanting to line yourself up, how do I take Social Security and when should I take it? How do I maximize my situation to pay the least amount of tax now and in the future so that my family's set up really well? Those are the things you need to think about. So a couple of things that I was thinking about talking about. So I was, again, a lot of great things, but avoiding people that are dream killers, right? Don't surround yourself with dream killers. Think big. Be positive. Don't be a dream killer. I tried to do that with my son. My wife, she's a little more of a dream killer, where he'll say something, she'll say, yeah, but this, or you haven't thought about that. And I just take the same playbook my mom and dad did with me, and that is they never said, that's a stupid idea. They never said, you can't do it. They were always like, my mom would say, well, that's nice, honey. That sounds really nice. And she might have been thinking, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard you say. My dad, the other way, same way. He was very encouraging if I had ideas. Because I was thinking about when I was little, I mowed grass when I was 8 to 10 years old, maybe probably longer than that. I have blacktop sealed driveways. Again, these are businesses that I had myself, and I didn't work for anyone else. When I worked at the law firm in college, and I was a runner, which means I ran stuff around town for them. This was before, you know, you could email everything. People started asking me, hey, are you going to the courthouse? Are you going here? I'm like, sure, you know, because I kind of made friends with them all. And then I decided to start a company called Local Mail Business Couriers. And I had about 12 people that I would check in with if they had something. I had a small fee I would charge every month, regardless of what I did for them. And that was a cool business. So I've always been somewhat wired that way to be self-employed. And I can tell you that you need to circle yourself with big thinkers and not dream killers. And the last thing I'll tell you is that we were able to hear, if you remember the baseball movie, The Rookie, played by Dennis Quaid? Well, the guy that the movie was based on was our keynote speaker on that Monday morning, and it was so inspirational. Well, I'll tell you this. He was at the reception the night before, and he was signing pictures, you know, of him when he played, I think, for the Detroit or something. And I know Scott Rowland, and Scott's being inducted. Of course, he's a great guy, local guy, well, from Jasper, but lives here locally, being inducted in Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. And so the guy that was there, he already had written on his picture, you know, think big, this, that, and the other. And now he would just write your name at the top, and it was signed at the bottom. So I said, hey, would you sign one of these for Scott Rowland? It's so funny because it says at the top, Scott Rowland, and it says think big. You can do it or whatever. And then at the bottom it said, he wrote, yeah, I know, Hall of Fame, blah, blah, something like that. It was pretty cool. So I can't wait to run into Scott and give that to him. So anyway, that's about all I have to say about that. We're going to take a quick break, come back, wrap up the show. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Another thank you to Lance Lyke and Lyke Law Group, Kenny Bland Auctions, and Unrivaled Electric for continuing to support the program. And I would say, if you want to advertise on this station, give them a call. It's great. And if it's someone that I know and I believe in them, then I will do the personal voiceovers for them. So everyone that I talk, that you hear my voice, it's legit. I promise you that. All right, so we just covered a lot this week. When do you use your Roth? Well, the answer was pretty simple, whenever the heck you want to. We had a Hot Rod on to talk about the conditions of the market and how it may be a little over its skis right now, of some upcoming podcast ideas, and just some inspirational thoughts for my conference in Cleveland. So hopefully next week we'll be able to bring you a really, really good show. And we're in the middle of hiring a new, I don't know what you want to call it, it's kind of a marketing coordinator, someone to help me. Help me, you know, get my guests lined up, help me put my radio show outlines together, help me get some content together. And to be honest, I mean, at this point, I have to do all that myself. So I was with dinner this week with a friend, and I was saying, you know, it's a lot of work. Now, I love it, otherwise I wouldn't do it, but it's a lot of work. So we're in the midst of hiring someone, and I think if things work out the way I hope they work out, you all are going to be very, very excited who this person is. All right, we're going to take a break, the long break for the week. Have a great weekend. Enjoy this beautiful weather, everyone. Take care. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.